and see.
Okay. Just in case.
I'm going to talk about something rather interesting, I think, tonight, and it's about who are you? There's a Greek word, persona. The Greek word persona means mask. And if you were in a play and wanted to be a certain role, you would put on a mask. And it would change the way people would look at you, and it would change the way people would relate to you. We have a persona today. It's the role we play every day. We have a variety of roles that we play. I see a lot of people here play the role of mother and father. That is one of the most difficult roles to play. You're always underappreciated. You always have something to do for the rest of your life. I see the role of the children as being the role of becoming something, becoming somebody. It is something we all need to do whether we want to or not. Our parents start by getting us to read and write, by thinking independently, eventually sending us to school. Some of us could start in kindergarten. I remember when I was 5 or 6 years old and my mother took me to school and she dropped me off and she said, "You go in there," and then she left. I couldn't believe my mother would leave me at this giant building with all these people I didn't know. She said, "You have to learn how to get along with other people. You have to learn how to read and write, and that's why I'm giving you to these people in this building, even though you don't know who they are." The first day at school, I cried most of the time because I was very lonely, wondering why my mother, who had been with me every day of my life up until that day, would just leave me. It was my first taste of being independent and of being somebody, and it was really scary because I didn't feel connected to my mother in the same way I did before that day. As I continued to go to school, I needed to be somebody. What I needed to be was a boy. What I needed to be was someone who took directions from the teacher. I needed to be a good student. And one of the first roles I had to play was that of being a student. But I wasn't very good, so I was an average student. But I was good enough. As I continued to go through the different grades, I continued to change and become different people all the time. Sometimes I became the boy who played baseball, and I got to wear a hat and have a glove and be part of a team. Sometimes I played the role of a son, and I played the role of a student at exactly the same time. It was amazing to me how many people I needed to be in order to fit in. I needed to be part of the community I lived in. At this time, I was living in Iowa. People would say, "Who are you?" I would say, "I'm a boy that goes to school in Iowa." That was my role. As I got older, I went to high school and found out how complicated life can really be. We have so many options. We have so many choices to make. At the time of the Buddha, in India, they had something called the caste system, which I think still exists today in some form. You were born into a certain role. You were born as a priest, Brahmin. You were born as a warrior or ruler. You were born as a merchant, and you were born as a worker. And you didn't have much opportunity to be anything else. I remember reading what the Buddha said about the Brahmins, that a man should not be respected just because they were born into a Brahmin family, but should be respected by what the man does, says, and thinks. As I grew up, I was born into a family that didn't necessarily have a caste connected to it. I was born into an American family. And what does that mean? It means that George Washington was the first president. It means that George Washington cut down the cherry tree and told the truth. And I needed to learn that so I could be in the role of an American. No matter what country we're born in, we have certain roles we need to play, and we have a certain cultural literacy that we need to acquire so we can be a good American, a good Sri Lankan, a good Cambodian, a good Canadian. Those are some of the roles we play. There are people who are citizens of the world. What a complicated role that would be. As people get older, sometimes they decide to find out who they really are. I love one of the stories that comes from India about the men who get old. It said when they get their first gray hair, they start thinking about leaving the family. They talk to the elder son and say, pretty soon you'll be in charge because I'll be leaving to get a beggar's bowl and a cane and live in the forest and find out what life really means. They're going to go from being somebody to being nobody. It's very difficult to be nobody. It takes a long time and a lot of practice. So the first thing they seem to give up is all the stuff that they think they own. Because all the stuff they think they own defines them in a certain way. For a very long time, I rode a motorcycle because I couldn't afford a car. And every time I got on the motorcycle, I felt a certain way. I felt a little rebellious. I felt like I was taking a chance. I may not make it back home again alive because I'm on a motorcycle. It was exhilarating. It was fun. I wanted to buy a leather jacket and boots and blue jeans and have a scruffy beard and long hair and be cool. But I was too old to be cool. So I just rode the motorcycle and finally got a car. I haven't ridden the motorcycle in a couple years, so that role that I played when I rode the motorcycle isn't useful to me anymore. Now I drive a four-door car that's pretty boring, but it has a radio and air conditioning, which is pretty good. So I play the role of the old man in the car with air conditioning, and it's a role that I like to play. But the people that went to the forest after they got to the certain age with the gray hair started to peel back all the different people they had been during their life, starting from the young boy who went to school and felt abandoned by his family, to the boy that went to high school, to the boy that went to college. The boy that found a job, had a family, raised his children so they could become somebody as well. And as the man sat in the forest meditating and reflecting on what it meant to be him, he started to come to a place of realization after peeling back all the layers of the onion that there was a divine force behind him. Now, this is how they felt at the time of the Buddha. And what he came to understand is that in the background of everything he did, there was a force, and that force was called Brahma or Brahma. The divine force of creation was behind him. The Buddha had a problem with this. When he peeled back all the layers of who he was as Siddhartha, before he became the Buddha, he did not find a divine force. He did not find Brahma or Brahma. What he found instead was anicca, impermanence. The driving force of all life in the universe is impermanence. Think about quantum physics. If you haven't, it's a fascinating subject. And one of my favorite books is called The Dancing Woolly Masters. It was written for people like me who didn't know anything about quantum physics. For a long time, we felt that the smallest particle that made up the universe was an atom. And everything broke down to the atom, and the atom was the building blocks of our reality of the cosmos. But then they kept getting better and better ways of looking at the smallest and smallest things, and they find out that there is something even smaller, the protons and neutrons. And they said, wow, look at how small these are, and these make up the atoms, and the atoms make up everything else in the universe. Then they found something even smaller than the protons and the neutrons. They found something called quarks, really, really, really small. And then they decided this must be the beginning of building everything we know of to be true and real in the universe and the cosmos. But then quantum physics came along, and they found something even smaller. They call it the wave-particle theory. They said it depends on how you look at it. Sometimes there's process, sometimes there's event. So when we come to the smallest building blocks of our reality in the universe, what we find is anicca. What we find is process. What we find is ever-changing concepts and reality. When the Buddha looked deeply and didn't find any divine force, but instead found the natural force of change and impermanence, he said, this leads to suffering. Why would that be the case? Why would humans have to suffer because everything changes? The Buddha said humans suffer because they don't want things to change. When I was 20 years old, I had really nice hair. It changed. Now I look in the mirror and say, who is that old man looking back at me? Impermanence, if you are attached to anything right now, will lead to suffering. It doesn't have to be big suffering. It could be little suffering, like not feeling very good, or wishing things were a little different, or wishing you had an extra piece of cake when you didn't get one. Just even the small things that if you could change them to make your life better would be wonderful, but oftentimes you're not able to change even the small things in your life. So the Buddha said, we need to have a revolution of consciousness, that our consciousness evolves in an evolutionary way, and we learn more and have deeper insights and see things differently, but it doesn't allow us to go beyond suffering. What we need is, pardon me, impermanence. What we need, he said, is a revolution in consciousness, that we need to transcend and go beyond the roles that we have learned. And these wise men of India who have left everything behind didn't do it to go back, they did it to go ahead. They learned something that allowed them to be more than who they were before. Siddhartha, in his enlightenment experience, learned something that allowed him to be so much more than he was before. Ironically and paradoxically, he was more because he did less. When you tell people that, they look at you like you're a little crazy. But when the Buddha did less, he did it in such a skillful way. The Buddha had less greed. The Buddha had less hatred and anger. The Buddha had less delusion and ignorance. He found a way to get rid of all the things that prevented him from being who he truly was. A man who had found the way to freedom. A man who had found the way to peace. We call that peace nirvana. The unborn, the undying. It doesn't evolve at all. As I think about the story of the Buddha, as I think about his revelation and insight into the true nature of what it means to be us, it allows me to go into a variety of situations and have the appropriate role. One of the roles we need to do if we drive is to be a kind and courteous driver. If I am speeding and the highway patrol pulls me over and says, "Who are you?" I need to be what he expects. I need to be the person in my driver's license. I need to be the person who knows when he was born and where he was born. If I were to say to the highway patrolman, "I am not who you think I am. I am everything and I am nothing at exactly the same time." He would arrest me and take me to the hospital for a psychiatric evaluation. So our role playing is very important. We need to be who people think we are. When I decided to become a monk, I said, "How do I learn to play the role of a monk?" And my teacher said to me, "The first thing you have to do is be a postulant for a year and take 8 training precepts." I took the 8 training precepts for a year, and then my teacher said, "Now you need to take the 10 training precepts and hold those for 2 years. I took the precepts, held them for 2 years. Then he said, "Now you need to take all the precepts and hold them for 5 years as an apprenticeship. And at the end of that 5-year apprenticeship, you will be evaluated. And if you are evaluated in a positive way, you can now be in the role of a monk." So nobody is born a monk. Some people take on the training to acquire the role of the monk. And now when the monk goes out into the world, people expect him to continue the role, to be the monk. So if the monk is in line at the grocery store, maybe the monk needs to let people in front of them if they're in a hurry, because the monk has a different kind of lifestyle and may have more time to stand in line and meditate and reflect on how wonderful it is to have patience and kindness. Roles become very important. Sometimes we have boys and girls who want to take on the role of the boyfriend and the girlfriend. This requires great thought and skill, because a lot of drama occurs when two people want to be together. Then they might get engaged. Another role to play, a very serious role, because what they're saying to each other is, I want to be with you for the rest of my life. That's a really long time. Then it's the day of the wedding, and we have the groom and the bride. And oftentimes the ceremony is very elaborate and very complicated, and all sorts of things are said and done to make it a special occasion. And then at the end of the rites and rituals of becoming married, the monk or the priest or the imam or the rabbi will say, you are now husband and wife, a brand new role to play. The husband and wife role goes along for a while, and then all of a sudden, one day, the wife says to the husband, you're going to be a father. And now the man says, first, I was a boyfriend, then I was a fiancé, then I was a groom, then I was a husband, now I'm going to be a father, another role to play. A really complicated role that requires no sleep. That goes on for a few years, and then the daughter comes to the father and says, you're going to be a grandfather. Another role to play. But this is the best role, because they get to leave, those grandparents. They don't have to stay. They only stay because they want to. So no matter who you are, you're going to have very many roles to play. But let me tell you what the best role of all is. And that's what you're practicing tonight. That's the role of being a Buddhist. Being a Buddhist allows you to look at the world in a very unique way. You see things that Christians don't see, that Muslims don't see, that Jews don't see, that Hindus don't see. The list goes on and on. You see things differently. And because of that, you have the opportunity to suffer less, to be happy, and ultimately to find peace in this very lifetime. How special it is to be a Buddhist. And even more special in America. Some people say Buddhists in America are like white crows. Very rare. That's a good thing. And as more people become Buddhist and see the world the way the Buddha did, we'll have less and less war, less and less starvation, less and less homelessness, more and more kindness, more and more compassion, and most of all, more and more wisdom and deeper insight into the true nature of what it means to be human. Humans have a lot of potential. We can change the world for the better, or we can change the world in not so good a way. The Buddha said, it depends on how you think, what you say, and what you do. Those three things can change the world in such a good way. I'm going to stop here because that's a lot of stuff to think about for the young and for the old and the in-between. But let me tell you what I like about getting old. People don't pay as much attention to you as they used to. That's a good thing. People are kind to you, and sometimes they'll say the same things two or three times just to make sure you heard them. That's a good thing. Sometimes, if you lose your train of thought, people will just smile and say it happens all the time to him or her because he's old. But I think getting old allows us not to be concerned about just the dumb things we were concerned about before, but now the important things that we're concerned about now. Getting old is really a good thing. I hope you all get old and prosper. Thank you.